We'll hear argument now in the case of Walker against Mitsubishi Motors. Mr. Jackson.
Good morning, Your Honor. My name is Donald Jackson, and I represent the plaintiff appellate, George Walker. First of all, this case I don't think there's much controversy about what the issue is before the court, and that is whether or not Mr. Walker cited enough facts in his affidavit once the case was converted from a motion to dismiss to summary judgment to withstand the summary judgment decision in this case. We believe, taking this case, the statements in his affidavit in the light most favorable to Mr. Walker, he has cited enough information and evidence to avoid summary judgment.
Your argument, in a sense, blends, if I can put it that way, the standard for 12b-6 rulings and the standard for Rule 56 rulings. It's certainly the case, even at the Rule 56 stage, that the facts and the inferences taken from those facts are taken in the light most favorable to the party opposing the summary judgment. But on the other hand, there's a duty of specificity, of putting your cards on the table at Rule 56 and saying that something happened between January and September, when the real issue is, did it happen after March 29th, doesn't tell you anything, because it could have happened in the broader time band all before March 29th. And what Mr. Walker never did was give specifics of something that happened to him, information certainly within his possession, after March 29th.
Well, we did, Your Honor. We as part of the affidavit, we stated that after March 29th, 2001, Mitsubishi engaged in a series of training sessions for individuals within the department, and Mr. Walker was the one individual who was excluded from those training sessions. These were sessions that were engaged in pretty much on a six-month basis, and I don't think there's any dispute that Mr. Walker was excluded from those six-month training sessions. And, you know, I don't know what more we could have said in the affidavit in terms of defining what happened after March 29, 2001, which is the date, the final date in the Woodford.
The district court says you never told him specifically what happened on what date. The district judge is very careful to distinguish between the matters that are pre-March 29 that are covered by the earlier proceedings and those which are post March 29. I don't see paragraphs in the affidavit or anything particular enough. What paragraphs are you referring to, or what specific?
Judge, we cite in our brief specifically.
Give me a page.
Paragraphs 9.
What page are you looking at?
I'm looking at my reply brief, Your Honor, on page 4. He specifically stated that on March 29, 2001 and thereafter, the defendant implemented a training program whereby associates in production tooling were assigned six-month training programs, and Mr. Walker was not part of those assignments. He complained routinely about being excluded from those training programs, and routinely he was denied by the group leaders, Krantz, Bristow, and Hiltz.
Well, wait a minute.
Page 3 and page 4, Your Honor.
Page 4.
Yes, in the middle of the page, middle of the paragraph.
Right. I'm not sure this September 21st statement is terribly helpful, since that's the one where he's complaining that his training of 2,080 hours is coming to an end, which didn't seem to me like a statement that he wasn't getting training. But I, you know,
well, but we dispute that, Mr. Walker.
That was Mr. Walker's statement. I was told by Rick Price in the presence of Linda Kendall that my training was ending because I had been trained. Price claimed that I'd received over 2,080 hours. But he's saying my training was ending. So what training is he talking about?
Well, that's the problem with it. We didn't get to
That's his statement. I don't see why.
He is precluded from that point on from working on these machines that provide constant training for everybody else in the department. But Mr. Walker's ended at that time at 2,080 hours, according to them. His statement is that he only had up to 30 hours of training on those machines. These are machines that, die maintenance machines that form the basis of a vehicle, and it's very technical training. And Mr. Walker's complaint is that when they instituted a new model, that thereafter they conducted these 6 months trainings after March 29, 2001, but he was never allowed to be included in those training cycles like everybody else. I don't know how we could be more...
How many were there? How many everybody?
There's actually 40 employees in this department.
Were any other minorities in?
There are two other minorities. One is African American and one is Hispanic.
Were they included in that training?
Your Honor, we unfortunately didn't get the complete discovery to find that out, whether or not they were included in the training or not. We know that Mr. Walker was not included in that training, but the other members of the department, a substantial portion of the white members of the department, did complete the training, the 6 month cycle.
And the other minorities that were in the department.
Well, I'm not sure about that, Your Honor.
Something that would be helpful if you were trying to make the case. If they were excluded, then that might add something.
But there's no question about that. But you know, this is the first time in my career that I've ever had a case taken away from me. Before discovery was even allowed. This is the first time I've ever been awarded summary judgment before, just based on the pleadings in the case and based on an affidavit. We thought the allegations in this affidavit were sufficient enough to advise the court that there were incidents, discrete incidents, after March 29th, after the Woodard settlement. The unfortunate thing about this case is it got hung up on the 1998 settlement, it got hung up on the Woodard settlement, when in fact our case was after March 29, 2001. We cited the 1998 case only as background. We didn't, we in no way intended to reach back and involve that case in this case. But it got hung up in those two cases when in fact the allegations that we were raising at that time was from March 29th on. March 29, 2001 on. But, I don't know what more we could have said in the affidavit other than the fact that these series of training programs were afforded to others in the department, non-African Americans, and Mr. Walker, as one of the two African Americans in the department, was not given the opportunity to train. And that's the key issue in this case, as to whether or not we have stated enough in the affidavit to avoid summary judgment and to develop these arguments by way of discovery.
So he was the only one excluded?
To our knowledge, he was. I don't know because, quite frankly, I was depending on discovery to develop a lot of things, the identity of everybody who received the training and everybody who did not. So I was rather surprised when this case was dismissed at this stage when, in fact, we had alleged in his affidavit that the training we're talking about began after March 29, 2001.
I don't see anything in your complaint that targets it like that. And certainly the district court judge didn't read it that way since he had two parts of his...
And I agree with that. The complaint simply says that he was denied training on the same under the same terms and conditions as white employees. You know, the unfortunate thing is nothing really changed between 1998 in terms of the process itself. The training changes all the time because they change car models all the time. And each time there's a model change, there's new training for this new model. And this just happened to be one of those years when they were changing models and the new training was afforded individuals other than Mr. Walker. So it's key that this training be ongoing. Part of the training is, in fact, ongoing assignment to these machines that continue to make these parts for Mitsubishi. And Walker, unfortunately, his complaint all along has been, I don't get the same training as the white employees get at the company. And that's and that's why we knew that March 29th was our date. I see my time is up.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Jackson.
Thank you.
Ms. Krieger.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the Court. As Mr. Jackson pointed out, this is a pretty simple case. I would like to respond to some of the factual statements that Mr. Jackson made. If I could point the Court to Mr. Walker's affidavit, in this case, really the only supporting evidence he had. As to Mr. Jackson's statements about a training program every 6 months, Mr. Walker's actual testimony in his affidavit occurs in paragraph 11 of the affidavit. It reads, in totality, the company implemented a training program whereby associates in production tooling were assigned 6 months training on the MHI machines by seniority. At least 11 associates with less seniority have received this training, training the company has denied me. There's not a single date in that paragraph. There's not a single indication of whether Mr. Walker requested to be included in the training, who he requested the training of, when he requested the training, or whether the training was denied him. What this case is really about is about a participant in a class action who was unhappy with the determination of the special masters. They decided his claims, the same claims he brings here, were worthless.
Well, but when he says they're not the same claims, and just to give him the benefit of the doubt, even the district court judge says, let's divide the pre-March 29, 2001 period from the post-March 29, 2001 period. I think everyone agrees at this stage that this case is not about anything that happened up until March 29th. That's encompassed within the prior proceedings, plural. But the question is about whether he's come forward with enough to show that something happened thereafter.
Well, I think it's absolutely true that the parties recognize, at least facially, that the case is not about what occurred prior to March 29th of 2001. I'm not sure if the plaintiff has actually internalized that understanding, given the fact that his affidavit is taken up almost solely with events that occurred prior to that date. I also point out to the court that although Mr. Jackson claims that they're not reaching back to the 1993 case, the complaint that he filed in 2003 is virtually word for word the same complaint he filed in 1993. So to claim that there are no connection between those two cases is pretty disingenuous.
Well, maybe he thinks that despite all of his efforts, nothing has changed at Mitsubishi. I mean, I suppose it's possible he could still have the same problem.
That's possible, but the burden was on Mr. Walker in response to summary judgment to come up with admissible evidence to create a genuine issue of material fact as to that. His affidavit failed to do that. And as to incidents that occurred after the release date, there are two specific incidents in the affidavit that occurred after the release date, and neither one is enough to give rise to a genuine issue of material fact for trial. The first was a meeting that you referred to, the only incident regarding training that has a specific date. And as you point out, that's not even about a denial of training. That indicates that Mr. Walker had received over 2,000 hours of training on the machine and that the training was ending. Mr. Walker, in his brief, claims that he disputed that, but that's not at all reflected in his affidavit. His affidavit simply says the meeting happened. He doesn't say he disputed how much training he received, and although Mr. Jackson says he claims he only got 30 hours, that's not something that's reflected in the record. Even if this incident did reflect some denial of training, which I don't think it does, it's not enough just to show that there was denial. Mr. Walker's never alleged or come forward with admissible evidence that there was a material adverse impact on his employment as a result of the denial, something required under Title VII and by this court. Similarly, he's not identified any similarly situated non-protected employees who received training, also a requirement under Seventh Circuit precedent. The only other allegation in his affidavit that occurs after the release date is one in which his coworker called him a coarse name. The name had nothing to do with race, at least facially. You know, and even if it did, a single incident that's only arguably racial is insufficient to state a hostile environment claim under Title VII or this court's precedent. Mr. Walker seems to have implied at various points that the lack of discovery in this case should excuse him from producing admissible evidence as to his claims. The problems are twofold. First, Mr. Walker could have asked the district court under Rule 56 for additional time to conduct discovery before responding to Mitsubishi's summary judgment motion. He didn't do so. Instead, he chose to file an affidavit that lacked adequate specificity to survive summary judgment. And tellingly, this affidavit is listed virtually word for word from the claim form that he filed in the Winter class action lawsuit. The fact that no discovery was conducted should be a benefit to Mr. Walker in this situation. He wasn't hemmed in by any prior discovery responses or deposition testimony, and thus had free rein to testify in his affidavit. Despite this free rein, and despite the fact that he himself should have knowledge of any alleged acts of discrimination occurring after the release date, Mr. Walker failed to testify with any adequate specificity whatsoever as to a discriminatory act occurring after the release date. He had ample opportunity to either conduct additional discovery or to testify with adequate specificity, and he didn't do so. The district court's grant of summary judgment was proper, and Mitsubishi asks that this court affirm that decision. Did the judges have another question?
Mm-hmm. Thank you, counsel. Well, Mr. Jackson, you had about 30 seconds left, so if you have anything further. All right. Well, thank you very much. Thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement.